Greetings, flock. This is Jasmine, and this is your weekly bonus content. I am joined today by the wonderful Lori Kim Alexander. If you haven't yet heard my full interview with Lori Kim, stop what you're doing, listen to that, and then come back to this bonus content, because this story that I hope to ask Lori Kim about is connected to something that she talked about in the full interview. Welcome to the flock, Lori Kim. Thank you for staying on with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I love it here.
I love that you love it here, because we want you here. So one thing that you talked about a little bit during our full interview, and perhaps you could recontextualize this for our flock members who might be listening to this at a different time than the full interview, you talked about Van Cortlandt Park and this sort of like string of trees at the bottom of, can you help me out here? It was like a string of trees at the bottom of a creek that had land built on it. If you don't mind reiterating that story, and then I want to ask you about how it connects to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So as part of the North Bronx Collective, we're doing work on Tibbetts Tail, which is at the end of the path of Tibbetts Brook. Tibbetts Brook was a brook that ran through this area of the Bronx, but it was buried to create more land to, at the time, grow produce for the Van Cortlandts. The Van Cortlandts had a plantation here in the Bronx, which is now called Van Cortlandt Park. The plantation, as you can imagine, was home to several enslaved Africans. And they were the ones, them and also Lenni Lenape folks. Just want to make a mention that, you know, here in New York City, we are on Lenape Hocking, Lenape land, Wappinger people land. And so these are the people who were tasked with covering up the brook, covering up the wetlands in the area. What has happened since, actually, is a lot of the public housing and buildings in the area have high mold issues, which has exacerbated the asthma rate in this area as well. And that mold issues is because it's on a brook. It's not supposed to be there, right? But Van Cortlandt's story is tied to Jamaica because that Van Cortlandt plantation and those enslaved Africans and indigenous people to the area were tasked with growing crops that were then crunched together, milled to make really horrible, dense but not nutrient-rich bread to feed enslaved Africans in Jamaica, specifically in Jamaica. If you know anything about the transatlantic slave trade and what happened in the Caribbean, there are several of our countries in the Caribbean that would get enslaved Africans first, a lot of times. So often the story goes that the most quote unquote warlike folks, the ones they didn't want on the boat any longer, were dropped in Jamaica. And so there were a lot of enslaved Africans in Jamaica. Now, when you have hundreds to one, if you think about it, right, on a plantation, that's a lot of food. And so folks were forced to work these long, arduous hours in fields doing heavy, heavy labor on very little food. And they wanted to produce food that was going to last long, was going to hit the belly and just sit in there, make you feel full, and also produce just enough energy for them to do that work. And then maybe sometimes some folks were allowed to till a little bit of the soil that was near the quarters in which they lived, or, you know, maybe they could squirrel away some seeds to do that somewhere else in the woods and maybe get offal, right, organ meat that was going to be thrown out to cook. But that is the connection between Van Cortlandt, the Van Cortlandt family, Van Cortlandt Park, and my country. To this day, there is a burial ground in the park that the only way you'll know it is if you don't blink as you pass by a very, very small plaque.
Wow. Wow. Okay, I have one final question for you. I am kind of blown away by how you are turning your passion into change making, given all of the bullshit around us all the time. Like, there is so many reasons for us to not get out of bed in the morning. There are so many injustices happening. It is hard to hold. And you're very well aware of these. And you exude this like positivity. And I want to know how. I want to know what your secret sauce is. And how I can get some of that secret sauce. Like, can you just talk a little bit about what gives you hope?
Hope gives me hope. Yes, to hope. If I did not have hope, I would not have will. And so I have to live believing in liberation in our lifetime. I have to live believing that. I have to breathe it every day. I am in no way able to do this every day, always. There are some days where I can't with a lot today. And so I do the small things that I can. But really, it's that spark of hope. And I have to give a lot of credit to my mother, who is the queen of the silver lining. Sometimes I get angry with her. I'm telling her something horrible has happened. Sometimes it's happened to me. And she's like, well, at least something else happy, right? At least this thing was okay. Like, did you not hear what I just said? Like, yes. However, we have to see that there's good to be done. And what is it for if we can't believe in it? What is it for if we cannot see the work to fruition? I see that fruition every day that I wake up and see the shit as well.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing a little bit of reading about just how people find joy or hope, and that what you just described is like the common thing that is in every single book, whether it's like the Dalai Lama or Gandhi or all of these great thinkers from history, great flawed thinkers from history. I'm just curious, like, to sort of dig in and see what it is. And I think that you just described it very beautifully. And I'm going to let that inspire me and change me and move me, because it's easy to get in a rut and it's easy to just give up or want to give up. And I feel like wanting to give up is almost more painful than giving up, because it's just this constant sort of battle that you're having with yourself. And yet we can also see the good things around us. I mean, our hen house, Marianne and I started this, you know, almost, we're in our 13th year. We started it because we believe in the power of the change maker. And now we've interviewed thousands and thousands of people, and it would be a disservice to those thousands and thousands of people that we have interviewed to not have the hope, because they do, you do. And so we can let ourselves have that gift too.
Yes, friend. And I will also say this thing, listen to something. All right. So what that mean, you know, something told me that small voice inside, that's your people. That's your people's people. That's the thousands of people that walk with you every day that you don't know. You are not one single solitary being. You are a wonderful, beautiful realization of all of that. So you got folks with you.
Ah, oh, that's beautiful. Oh, thank you. That was such a gift too. Well, Lori Kim, I cannot thank you enough for joining us on the Our Hen House podcast and joining us for the Flock bonus segment. And hang on the line for just a minute after we say goodbye. But thank you so much. I know our flock is going to absolutely love this conversation. I appreciate the story that you just told us and letting us in a little bit into how you do you so beautifully.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this time. I appreciate this energy so, so much. Thank you so much for everything.